Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. June 12, 2022. A form similar to the Creator. The Ten is a spiritual kli. Due to the fact that everyone at least in some way nullifies himself before others striving to achieve a common, mutual inclusion, we bring our qualities into some similarity with the Creator. The Creator completely nullifies himself, and if we unite through mutual self-nullification, in this way we build a spiritual model, a form similar to the Creator. To the extent of this similarity, we will begin to feel how a certain glow descends upon us, that a certain force from above is present between us. And then we will feel that we are coming closer to the Creator, and He is coming closer to us. After such exercises, we will find that our connection under such conditions brings us closer and advances us to the Creator. Like a small child who is just learning to walk and takes his first hesitant steps, so are we already on the way to Him, and we take another and another step with one foot and then with the other. We will feel that it is the Creator who is moving our legs, like a mother who carefully moves the legs of her baby so that he knows how to walk. Thus, we will begin to distinguish the actions of the Creator over us, that it is He who moves our legs, right, left, and teaches us to move forward. We will feel that the Creator is within our actions. In every action we will want to reveal Him, and we will reveal Him precisely through this work. I will understand that I do not walk on my own and do not embrace my friends myself, but the Creator does all this for me. And I, while trying to perform the same actions, begin to reveal Him and discover that it is He who moves my arms and legs and fills all the space between us. From the first part of the Daily Kabbalah lesson, June 9, 2022. Shemati number 48. Right, Wholeness, and Truth. Medium published my new article, The Desire to Make It Big. We all want to succeed, to achieve things. That is what society instills in us, from a very early age. Some people end up being very successful, and some simply shuffle along through life. In this endless quest, few stop to think, what should really be considered success in life? With what should we reach the finish line so that we can sum up for ourselves in the last moments the measure of our success and say, great, I succeeded in life. Our inner engine is a desire to have pleasure and enjoyment. That's why we want to achieve all kinds of things, and when we succeed in achieving them, we feel satisfied. We have existential desires like the desire for food, sex, family, human desires like the desire for money, honor, control, and also a desire for knowledge and education. The mix of desires we have at any given moment is influenced by our personal inclinations and the environmental influences we absorb. As a result of all these, we set goals for ourselves. On the way to their conquest, we usually encounter competitors and try to win. Achievements and successes are measured in relation to them, of course. Margaret Thatcher was the daughter of a small grocery store owner. At the age of 24, she ran for a seat in Parliament and lost. Thanks to her adherence to her goal, she finally managed to reach the position of British Prime Minister and became known as the Iron Woman. For many, she is a symbol of a person who built her success from scratch. In contrast, those born with a golden spoon in their mouth and who reach high positions through the arrangements of their parents, are treated as less personally successful in life. This is to say, success is measured by one's degree of investment, effort, and achievement. As we proceed through life, the desire to succeed becomes increasingly clear, sharpens, focuses, and overcoming obstacles on the way to the goal requires that we go through internal changes, building ourselves. Throughout history, there have been people who have aroused a desire to be unique, a desire to realize life to the very fullest. They set themselves the goal of exploring the secret of life itself, the secret of success from a top-down perspective. These same individuals asked themselves, are we born to live, and die like all other creatures in the world, or is there something higher we can achieve during our existence on Earth? Is there some eternal goal which will remain in our hands even after the death of the body? After all else, family, wealth, respect, status, expertise, education, all of these things that we cannot take with us when we leave this world. Usually, people do not think about success at such a level for the simple reason that there are no apparent answers to such big questions. And if this is the case, then why should I delve into such matters? It is better to flow with what unfolds without over-scrutinizing. Just set goals for ourselves, invest, achieve, succeed in life like everybody. Eat, drink, enjoy as if there is no tomorrow, because tomorrow we may die. This is how we have lived from generation to generation, but today we are already beginning to see a change. More and more people are asking themselves, what is the point of all this success if it is clear in advance that we all have an expiration date? The most advanced discoveries of science, too, reinforce the sense that there is something beyond what we are now able to perceive in our senses, beyond what we now describe as a solid reality. They explain that the image we perceive is completely subjective, and if we were different, we would probably perceive a different picture of reality. The real space of success is open to those who do not agree to continue living only for the sake of living, but to those who aspire to reveal a wider picture, a higher reality beyond our narrow existence. Gradually, through this research, we are able to attain true success, when we learn and understand that there is a colossal mechanism surrounding our life and our world, a great system which operates and guides us. This goal prepares us, in great depth, to develop from the animate level to the human level, to enter the wide world of eternity and to understand why it exists. Michael Leitman, on the Times of Israel, Disinformation in a World Without Truth. Not long after the announcement that the Department of Homeland Security, DHS, is setting up a Disinformation Governance Board, DGB, its intended czar, Nina Jankowicz, announced her resignation. Several days later, the Biden administration announced the disbanding of the entire board and the abandonment of the whole idea. Apparently, the criticism that the DGB drew, including some that likened it to the Ministry of Truth from George Orwell's book 1984, and Jankowicz's assertion, "I am eligible for it because I'm verified, but there are a lot of people who shouldn't be verified, who aren't, you know, legit, in my opinion. I mean, they're not trustworthy," contributed to the decision to shelve the initiative. "I think that no one can truly claim to know the truth because truth is not at all a matter of opinion or a statement, or even this or that action. Truth is what exists, and falsehood is what does not exist, and the only thing that exists is the unbreakable connection among all people and all things. Currently, people think that only their view is correct, and everyone else's opinion is wrong. But since all the views are part of the network that connects us, all the views are inherently incorrect when they are viewed separately, and inherently correct when viewed as part of the network. This is why the network itself is the truth, and nothing else can be regarded as true regardless of its place and function in the network. To make it a little clearer, think of the liver and the heart in a person's body. From the perspective of the heart, everything that the liver does is false, wrong, and deleterious. From the perspective of the liver, everything that the heart does is equally absurd and detrimental. However, when viewed from the perspective of the person's body, which connects the two and derives benefit from both, the two are priceless, indispensable. The truth, therefore, is visible only from the perspective of the network. As our bodies, so are we. We are living in a network that determines everything that happens to us, good or bad, pleasant or unpleasant. The course and the events of our lives do not depend on any single person or action because we are all part of a network of connections, and the network determines everything for those within it. In other words, no one thing or element determines anything, but the connection among the elements determines their attributes, value, functionality, and longevity. Put differently, the connections between the elements determine everything. Returning to the statement about what is true and what is false, what exists, and is therefore true, is that which enhances the connections in the network, the connection between people. This connection in the network is what we call the upper force, the creator, or God. This is the truth. Accordingly, falsehood is anything that contradicts connection. We can easily tell that the world is currently based on falsehood because it is falling apart, disintegrating. Currently, we strive to dominate, abuse, disengage, alienate, and divide. Because of it, we are contradictory to nature and are living in a lie. As a result, however hard we try to curb CO2 emissions, deforestation, and use of plastics, we will not reverse the downward spiral of the world. As long as we do not strive to enhance connection among people, above all differences and antagonism, we will keep going in the wrong direction, a false path that will lead to nothing but defeat and agony. It turns out that if we want to know the truth about the world, we must look at it only from the perspective of the network, the entire system that is our world, and even our universe. To do that, we must first rise above our narrow self-centered vision, as if we are liver cells judging the universe from the liver's perspective, and adopt the perspective of the person where the liver and the heart reside. From that transcendent perspective, everything that we will see will be the true and actual reality. Michael Leitman, on the Times of Israel, on the defendant's stand once more. A couple of days ago, the Commission of Inquiry on the Occupied Palestinian Territory, including East Jerusalem, and Israel, established by the United Nations Human Rights Council, UNHCR, on May 27, 2021, submitted its first report. To no one's surprise, the report is completely one-sided. In fact, it did not even pretend to be anything else. Nevin Thumpe, the Commission's chair, stated bluntly, "The findings and recommendations relevant to the underlying root causes were overwhelmingly directed towards Israel." Although accustomed to being the perennial defendant, it seems that the Commission's statements touched deeper this time. Rather than explain how the Commission is one-sided, apart from its self-explanatory title, I would like to quote a somewhat lengthy but very apropos passage from Israel Hayom's senior diplomatic commentator, Ariel Kahana, "Russia invaded Ukraine and is committing war crimes there. China locked down cities with tens of millions of people, is menacing Hong Kong, and oppressing the Uyghurs. In Ethiopia, hundreds of thousands more have died in a war no one cares about. In Venezuela, mass protests were forcibly suppressed, and of course, in North Korea, the regime continues to abuse its citizens and threaten its neighbors," writes Kahana. As for these minor issues, he continues, "the international body known as the United Nations Human Rights Council either doesn't address them at all or only partially. When it comes to Israel, on the other hand, the UNHCR has all the time and resources in the world. Special investigators. And professional, unbiased reports that somehow show that Israel is responsible for every atrocity across the globe. If it weren't so sad, it would be funny. While this report is clearly another step in the campaign to delegitimize Israel, I must say that regrettably, we are complicit in this crime. We are allowing it to happen, even though we can prevent it. I will say more than that, while every word Kahana wrote is true, the report is correct, as well. By failing to make the necessary changes within Israel, we are making ourselves responsible for every atrocity across the globe, as Kahana put it. I have no wish to blame anyone in the world since, in my opinion, they have no free choice, while we, and only we, do have the choice to do what we must, yet we are not doing it. This is why we are treated as we are. What is our choice? We have the choice to correct our relations here in Israel, transcend division and hate, and solidify our nation as one unit. We have the choice to place mutual responsibility and solidarity above all other values. We have the choice to practice that which you hate, do not do unto your neighbor, and we also have the choice to practice loving our neighbors as ourselves. We have the choice, but we are doing none of the above. This is why the world says that our country feeds resentment and fuels recurrent tensions, to use the words of the report. We are not doing this by mistreating Palestinians, we are doing this by patronizing and hating one another. Israel must show the world what it means to be a corrected society, a properly organized country based on mutual responsibility and genuine mutual concern. Then, and only then, will humanity accept us. Until we set such an example, the world's attitude toward us will keep worsening, to drive us to do what we must. You will find more on the link between Jewish unity and hatred of Israel in the Jewish Choice, Unity or Anti-Semitism, Historical Facts on Anti-Semitism as a Reflection of Jewish Social Discord. Michael Leitman, on the Times of Israel, Iraq, ties with Israel punishable by death. On November 30, 1947, one day after the League of Nations, precursor to the UN, announced the end of the British mandate in Palestine and the establishment of two states, one for the Arabs and one for the Jews, Palestinian Arabs began to attack Israeli settlements. That was the beginning of Israel's War of Independence. On May 14, 1948, when the British officially left Palestine, David Ben-Gurion announced the establishment of a Jewish state in Palestine, namely the State of Israel. The very next day, Syria, Jordan, Iraq, Egypt, joined by Saudi and Sudanese forces, and Lebanon, declared war on the fledgling state and their armies invaded the country. On July 20, 1949, the final armistice was signed, with Syria, and the war was over. Israel was now a fact. The only country that never signed an armistice with Israel is Iraq. The War of Independence was not the end of wars for Israel. Nevertheless, following many years of frequent clashes, all the countries, including even hostile Syria, are now in an official state of peace, or at least an armistice with Israel, if not complete normalization of relations. There is no love lost between Israel and its neighbors, as much as Israel would like there to be. However, there has also not been a state of active war with any of them for several decades. Iraq, however, remains the one exception. To his day, it is in an official state of war with Israel. Recently, it underscored that point when Iraqi lawmakers have passed a bill criminalizing any relations with Israel, including business ties. According to the legislation, violation of this law is punishable by death or life imprisonment. A parliament statement also said the legislation is a true reflection of the will of the people. Israel has no border with Iraq, no conflict of interest over water, oil, or waterways, and no religious conflict as Iraq is not particularly fanatical about its Islam. Iraq's policy toward Israel is driven by one and only motive, hate. It simply hates the fact that Israel exists, and this is all the reasoning it needs. Hate is a very powerful engine. With hate, you can keep a nation united. Every politician knows it, and Iraq is no exception. Its hatred of Israel keeps it together. However, we can change Iraq's attitude toward us, if we choose to. We may not know it, but Israel holds the key to the world's attitude toward it. If we change how we feel about each other, Iraq, and in fact all the countries that hate us, will also change how they feel about us, for the better. Israel is always at the center of attention. Just look at the latest report by the UN Human Rights Council. Other countries may commit the worst atrocities, but only Israel has a mandatory agenda item aimed at condemning Israel in every single commit of the council. Because we are constantly at the center of attention, the hatred between us makes the world detest and despise us. This is how the world is built, and there is nothing we can do to change it. Therefore, if we want the world's attitude toward us to improve, we must improve our attitude toward each other. This is how it has always worked, and it will never change. Moreover, when we fight among ourselves, the world accuses us of inciting wars throughout the world. When we make peace with one another, the world thinks of us as peacemakers. Until we accept this fact and act accordingly, nothing will improve in the world's relation toward Israel. Is luck something supernatural? Question: is it possible to say that fate is what would have happened if I had not unknowingly interfered with this development process? Answer: how do you know how to interfere and how not to interfere? I can never say that I am interfering now and such should happen, and if I had not intervened, it would have happened differently. Question: but you said that luck depends on a person. So if I'm lucky, I build my fate this way and not otherwise? Answer: no, you are not building luck itself. It simply and suddenly manifests itself in your actions, although you don't know exactly how to recreate them. Luck is something you can't imagine in advance, and therefore, when it manifests, you say, luck. I've succeeded. I didn't know how it would turn out, and it turned out so. Question: and if I try to create good connections, will I be lucky? Answer: this is usually how we teach ourselves and others. But that doesn't mean anything. I can think of very good things and yet suddenly it turns out the opposite. Question: meaning it does not work linearly and not as if I have just done some actions and I am 100% lucky. So what is luck then? Something supernatural? Answer: luck is something that you can't plan in advance and suddenly everything turns out for the best for you. From CAB TV's Spiritual States, May 24, 2022. Psychological self-complacency. Question: psychologists say that happy people during a streak of bad luck think things like, it could have been even worse. Therefore, they quite easily cope with a streak of failures. Do you think this method is correct? Answer: no, by no means do I believe that running away from the correct work with egoism will lead us to a good life. We all similarly have to think about how to rise a step above egoism, and then we will be fine. Whereas, running away from all sorts of egoistic corrections and disturbances is not correction and is not a way to a better life. Comment: yet, people say, if you think that it could really be much worse than it is now or that the other one has it even worse, it helps. My response: this is absolutely right. But this is not a method of correction, it is simply psychological self-complacency. From CAB TV's Spiritual States, May 24, 2022. Why the Creator and not God? Question: Inna asks, why do you always say the Creator and not God? Answer: in order to separate the name God, which exists in all religions, beliefs, and for all people in general, from the Creator, whom we recognize as a force, the upper, single, and perfect force that created us, for a specific purpose. God is something that exists above us, and somehow controls everything. And the Creator is precisely the one who creates. In every second, He creates this world, creates it as if anew. The Creator is a much more personal concept. God is something like God. He is outside of me and He constantly exists. The Creator, however, is obligatory, coercive, and expects something from me. Question: what does He expect from me? Answer: that I will start demanding corrections from Him. That I will discover that I am completely dependent on Him and only He can give me the state in which I will be similar to Him. I ask Him to do something and He does. Can you imagine? On the one hand we are powerless and on the other hand we govern. Question: does it mean that I cannot do anything by myself? Answer: But no one can do anything without me either. That is, I cannot do anything, yet without me asking, demanding, and instructing, nothing will happen. Question: but how will I ask? How can I ask the Creator to do something? Answer: force him. My sons defeated me. It is in this way that we begin to feel that we are his children and that he created us, precisely for such a role. All this is, of course, amazing. Question: at the beginning you said not God, because God for all people is a personal perception. Do you not want a person to be in this perception? Answer: no. The Creator is the one who creates. He brings the entire creation back to life at every moment. This is why we have to react to this every minute and feel and see the Creator's creation every second. The Creator in Hebrew is Bo Yireh, come and see. You have to come, reveal, and see. That is, it is a more extensive name, which has movement in it. From CAB TV's News with Dr. Michael Leitman, April 28, 2022. How to pray through a group. Question: how can one pray through a group? Answer: prayer is a request. You can use any words, any thoughts. It comes from within. How is it possible to explain how to pray? It is felt in the heart. You do not have to say any words or perform any actions. You must bring yourself to a state where you will have the most correct desires at the moment in the course of your development. If they are correct, they will invite maximum reforming light upon you, and it will lead you further. At every given moment when you reveal your desire for correction, correction descends upon you. The next moment you reveal again the desire for correction and the correction comes. This desire should not be artificial because you create such a strong inner tension, such a desire for unity, for being similar to the light, that it begins to influence your desire and correct it. The entire chain of human development consists of this alternation of your aspiration for correction and the response of the light. From CAB TV's I Got a Call. How to pray. Hiding behind a technological shell. Question: in Japan, they have rock gardens. Although this is an inanimate level of nature, the Japanese say that there is life in them. Where does this feeling, this perception come from? Answer: it suggests closeness to nature, when people really feel some kind of life in the inanimate things. This, indeed, is the case. Comment: however, on the other hand, the Japanese are characterized by the development of technology, that is, a certain level of egoism. My response: all this is external and artificial. I was in Japan. They really have great capabilities, modern equipment and everything else. But at the same time, it is clear that all this is absolutely external, and not theirs. Inside they are completely different. Internally, they preserve themselves, their attitude to life, regulations, family, to everything that exists, and in no case do they connect themselves with everything external that has come to them. They took from the outside world everything they needed to surround themselves with this outer shell and with its help to protect themselves from the outside world. For them, all innovations are not a means of communication, but in some way a means of isolation, because behind the beautiful and perfect outer technological shell they remain the same. There is nothing special here. Historically, the isolation of the country for many centuries, plus religion and forced proximity to nature, in connection with earthquakes, tsunamis, and all sorts of similar problems has left its mark on them. From CAB TV's Close-Up. Branch of Sabre, May 15, 2011. When there is no goal in life. Question: a person is a vessel that is brought to life by a source of some kind of energy. Why are young people in need of a boost with energy drinks today? They seem to feel a complete lack of vitality. Why do people not have the spirit of life at a young age? Answer: it's due to the fact that they have nothing for which to aspire. It is not about the energy of life. We get energy from purpose. When I see a big, great, worthwhile goal before me, I get energy, I start to fire up like a bull whose eyes are filling with blood. I am rushing toward this goal, but only if it is before me, like a red cloth before a bull. However, if it is not there, then the person just fades away. Our generation has very big egoism, to which everything is available in this world. People can fly, drive, and communicate via the internet with any corner of the globe. They look at all this and feel that they will not be satisfied. There is no reason to make any movements. It is better to go and take drugs, disconnect from hopelessness and emptiness. Therefore, drugs and antidepressants are the only thing left for a person. Kabbalah, however, says that beyond the level that seems meaningless, empty, and worthless to you, and that you see our small round earth and everything on it is limited, and that any day all this may end, however, there is a completely different world, a new, upper dimension. This is where we have to get to. We can do it now, today. Moreover, the development of the internet helps us to feel that we are in communication with each other, and this communication can take us to the next level. And here we come to amazing possibilities. From Cab TV's close-up. Does the Creator exist? May 9, 2011. Michael Leitman, on Quora, do Jewish people have a common genetic background? No. However, they have a predisposition to universal unification in order to attain connection with the upper force. That is the reason for their leaving ancient Babylon. Their common genetic background exists in their descendants, which are souls, and the same soul goes through several bodies. This is called the incarnation of the souls in the wisdom of Kabbalah. For instance, Jews existed in all states from ancient Babylon to their current incarnations. They went through all of these lives. They even know their incarnations, or they can find out how they passed through various cultures, such as Spanish, German and Eastern European, all the way until today. Moreover, after they spread from Babylon throughout the world, the underlying desire that developed humanity was growing both in them and in the nations of the world. Today, the desire's development has reached a certain level where more and more people feel a predisposition to universal unification. They are identical in every way to those of us who came from ancient Babylon, even though they have been distant from us throughout the 3,700 or so years since we left Babylon. This predisposition to universal unification that more and more people are feeling is a desire that increasingly surfaces today, one to discover the upper force and to undergo a process of correction in order to do so. That is to change the desire from personally benefiting oneself to benefiting others. Based on Cab TV's close-up. Around the World with Kabbalist Dr. Michael Leitman on February 20, 2011. Written, edited by students of Kabbalist Dr. Michael Leitman.